Oh, yeah. That cracker, that beer sounds so good. Welcome back to another episode of Weekend's Last Beer, Season 1, Episode 3. We got a lot lined up today. We're going to hit on RBC Canadian reactions today. We're going to hit on me and Dylan's golf game today. Talk about top five golfers of all time. Talk about Frank's first Father's Day next weekend. And then we're going to close it out with the U.S. Open preview. How you guys doing today?
Good. I'm like hungover. I'm exhausted. I was all the way up in Johnstown. Golf for my buddy's brother's memorial for a golf outing. Played really well. Saw a lot of friends that I haven't seen probably in like a year or two. Some of my friends were all the way from Austin that flew in. And then we played only like a 9-hole course, but then we played 18. We just kept driving past everybody and just played another 9. It was pretty funny. We're just like ignoring everybody and just kept playing. We were drinking until like 12 o'clock at night, and we were at the course at like 10 a.m. That was all you could drink, basically. So we did some damage that day. So I don't think I'm gonna have a weekend's last beer today, boys.
Okay, that's totally fine. That sounds like one hell of a weekend, but I'm glad you enjoyed it with your boys and you played very well.
But other than that,
Dylan, how you doing?
Hanging in there. I've been recollecting for the last couple hours on how shit I am at golf. The driver, I think I know what the driver needs, but it's like my first time out with this new driver, and we'll see. We got some range.
Which one did you get, Dill?
I got the QI10.
I love that driver. That's a good driver. I think it's better than the QI35. Tell you the truth.
I have to agree. It's my first time with the carbon face, so we're liking it, but I like how it feels, but I need to learn how to hit it.
I feel like sometimes you feel like you're the club, like with definitely tailor-made clubs. I feel like when you're looking down on the face, it looks like it's like tilted like more left than it is actually, and yes. Then your brain like makes it have to like straighten it out.
Yeah,
and then you're like, okay, and then you hit it and you're going like far right. Yes. With it. So when I had TaylorMade driver, I was like, okay, I'm aiming like hard left side, like the left bunker at the end of that. And then like it would hit it perfectly straight down the fairway. So it was just so wonky playing with that club. I just never liked them. I was always a Callaway guy. But the QI10 I played with a couple times with my friend, and I fell in love with that club too. So yeah. I think it's all about the face and how it looks on the top.
It feels nice. What I'm going to do is I'm going to honestly go to the range and just get like a large bucket. Mm. And I'm just going to dedicate the whole thing to driver. I'm going to bring my club wrench. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to fuck around with the settings a little bit and kind of go from there, see if I can move it around a little bit, change around with the loft and the angle. And go from there, because I want to get it to actually fit my swing. Because obviously, there's the way to swing a club, and then there's the way people swing their actual clubs. There's no like right way to do it. I mean, you look at Bubba Watson and like Matt Wolf and them, and you're like, all right, how does that work? But everyone has their own swing, and you're going to make it work. As I was telling Jack today, I'm like, my swing may be ugly, but I got down to like a 6 handicap, so obviously, it's working in some aspect.
Speaking of that, I just feel like sometimes with just like driver, like this weekend I couldn't hit a driver. It could have been this, you know, 3 transfusions and like multiple beers I had beforehand. But then I sort of like sobered up by like the end of the back 9. So I was like still hitting it bad. And I was just like, okay, this day is a wash. And I'm like sort of panicking right now because I was like, I'm going on a golf trip in like a month. Actually, Chris was there. It's his bachelor party. And I'm playing at one like my big bucket list courses, and I'm like, if I play like shit on that course, I'm gonna be like so upset with myself. But at the same time, it's one of the hardest courses in, I think it's the top 20 hardest course in America. So if I break like 95, I'm happy, but still I think I'm not gonna even break that. I don't even think I'm gonna break that there. So I gotta sort of put that in my mind too.
Yeah, Dylan and I, we played at, I think it was top 5 courses in Maryland today. We played at Bully Rock. And that course was beautiful. They have the Big Ten Championship for college golf there. Oh, that's cool. And it's in Havana Grace, and it's one of the, I think, the nicest courses ever played at.
Really?
Yeah, no, it was super nice. We got to go, Frank. We got to go out there with you because me and Dylan talked about it. We're like, we need Frank out here. We got to go back out. It's a very well laid out course, and they had the starter at the first tee, obviously, most courses do, and it was just super nerve wracking because me and Dylan were up to drive, and I mean, I had a good drive. Dylan had a kind of shitty drive.
It was shitty.
But the thing is, we were thinking about it. It's like, how do these professional golfers, how do they play in front of thousands of people on the course and like hit 300 yards? So, Dylan, what are your takeaways of this course? And then, Frank, we will tell you some funny things that happened that we wish you were there for.
Honestly, I mean, anytime you play like a Pete Dye or a Donald Ross course, you know you're in for some, you know.
Good old Vance, Dylan's brother.
You know you're in for some fun because they just love to torture the average golfer. But their courses are beautiful. I really liked it. It reminded me of kind of like an Oakmont style with the way the rough was. We're sitting there in the rough and I'm putting my foot down. I'm like, dude, this has to be 3 or 4 inches. Like I'm just sitting there like measuring it against my shoe. And I'm like, yeah, this needs to be like 3 or 4 inches. Like it was the roughest
rough. That's what your wife says every night. Sorry, I had to say it.
Oh, that's crazy.
Go ahead, Dylan. Keep on talking.
Sorry. No, I mean, it was a nice course. The greens rolled true. If it didn't rain, it would have been a lot better. But we still had, you know, the shots that always bring us back. I mean, Jack nailed a 45 footer, so that was nice.
Yeah, dude, let's talk about that. No, on the ninth hole, it had just started raining. It was coming down pretty hard. And my drive was in the fairway, probably like 200 out. I took a 5-iron, was a little short of, like, I was on the green, but I was not too far on the green. And I decided to take a putt, and dude, I drilled the 45-foot putt for birdie.
That's nice.
It was the most incredible moment of my life, not gonna lie. So shout out to Bull Rock for that.
Yeah, that was my favorite hole, I think, because that's the one where I absolutely killed that drive. I think it was, a 386-yard hole.
Yeah.
I think I had, a 104 shot in, and it was across that pond, and I just freaking hit that nice little baby fade right over the center of it, and it just fell right there in the fairway, and then just put a 54 to, 6 feet. I was like, yeah, this is going to turn my day around.
You know, it was a great course. So, Frank, the funny story I want to tell you about is we're in the middle of the round. I think we're on hole 12 because hole 13 was the one that had the ravine on the right. We're on hole 13. It's a short par 4. I hit my driver pretty good, and then I put it on, the hill that's by the sand trap by the green for my second shot. And I was walking down the hill to get to my ball, and I didn't know they had, wood planks in the side of the hill. So I walked down the hill, not noticing they were there. Right. I slipped and my leg literally buckled, went ankle back. And dude, I'm in so much pain the rest of the day. I still, muscled through it, but my drives weren't the same. Cause I couldn't, that was my right foot. That's my front foot. So where I get all the power from. Oh, and no. It was not fun. Dylan was going to his ball and he's like, Jack, where are you? Because he saw me fall down. And it was horrible.
How much, all right, did you guys really like the shot? I mean, did you guys like the course so much that you guys went to the pro shop after?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Come on, Frank.
You have to do that. Yeah. You like the course, you have to buy at least something from the course.
You got the hat there. I got a nice Nike Blade shirt from there. It said Bully Rock on the sleeve. Really nice
Six really nice. Out of the Maryland crab on it and everything.
Yeah. It was cool, Frank.
Any course you go to, I mean, I even told my wife, like, when I go to the Pete Dye course at the French Licks, she's like, oh, how much is it? I was like, oh, well, for a round, I think it's like $5.45. But then I was like, that's not going to be the pricey part. And my wife just starts to me. She goes, oh, Jesus Christ, the pro shop. I was like, oh, I'm going to. That yeah. pro shop. Like, you have to. You know, like, I feel like every guy's like, if you go to, like, you know, Pinehurst or somewhere like top of the line, you have to. And I think even those courses know, like, people are going to buy a ridiculous amount of stuff, like, no matter what.
We were talking about that today. We're like, dude, like, when we finally make our trip to Pinehurst or, you know, one of these other great courses, we're going to drop, like, $400 or $500 in this pro shop. It's going to be easy.
Easy. I mean, like, sometimes they're, like, quarter zips are, like, $200. Just And you're going to be buying a little bit more than that. I'm going to probably buy two hats, three hats, and then, you know, something like that around there. Because when I went to the LPGA U.S. Open, that was in Lancaster, dude, I dropped, I think, like $750.
Damn.
Yeah.
It was bad. No, I bought things for my wife, too. So I bought her a nice skirt, a nice quarter zip, a nice golf shirt, and a hat. And then I bought myself a quarter zip and two golf shirts. And that was $750 right there.
Good God. Yeah. No, it was cool because, like we said, that's where – they play the championship round for college golf.
Women's Big Ten championship.
Yeah, and it was cool because you were driving up to the course and you could see all the Big Ten colleges and their flags. And then each as you got to the parking lot, they had little like parking spots for those colleges. So it was really cool. They were telling us that about a couple years ago, the course record, I think for women or just in general, was 64. And one girl from Vanderbilt or Purdue, I forget what school it was. She was
Minnesota.
Yeah. She tied the course record at 64. And now she's on tour. I forget her name, but they had the LPGA US Open there a couple years ago as well. Like, I think it was like 10, 15 years ago. But yeah, dude, I'm telling you, for a course like that, you're thinking the round's going to be $200 a pop, right? Per person. We only paid, I mean, it was a decent price for that nice of course. It was like $120 a round.
Yeah.
Not bad at
all. It was like,
that's amazing. Like, I mean, we do some public courses around here that is not at that level. That, you know, if they have a U.S. Open there for any, you know, professional or like a championship, that's insanity. I did drive past Cobbs Creek actually today just to take a look at it because me and my wife had to go to a one-year-old birthday right after I got back from Johnstown. That was fun. But then I was like, oh, I'm driving past Cobbs Creek just to look at it because Tiger Woods put over $100 million into that. I don't know. If you aren't from Philadelphia, Cobbs Creek is just a historical golf course that is, you know, really just enriched in history. And it went really downhill since, like, I would say the early 90s. They really didn't take as much care of it as they should. And they were ready about to close it down. And Tiger Woods jumped in and was like, no, this is part of history. You need to keep this. And they're putting over, like, I think $150 million altogether into it. And this course is going to be crazy good. And they're already talking about putting a PGA, you know, tournament there. And it's just, like, really exciting for Philly because we don't have – I mean, we have so many private clubs that could have PGA. But public courses-wise, it's like I do have a couple, like, hard public courses, but not, like – oh my God, this is beautiful, blah, blah, blah. Like, this is like a pristine course that could have an open or something like that there. Mm-hmm. I think that's what we're missing. Do you guys agree?
I do agree.
You're good. Yeah, I agree. I think it'd be fun to see, you know, go there, see if we can see a tournament there, being played there. Yeah. But moving on, tournament just ended today. It was the RBC Canadian Open. Reactions to that. So I didn't get to watch it really at all.
It was a pillow fight at the end.
Really? Yeah. I heard. I knew we went to play the playoff round.
Dude, I think it was like if you go to playoffs, dude, I want these guys dropping down. I mean, it's so easy for someone like on the couch saying, hey, I want these guys dropping dimes in the playoffs. But like, we got so lucky with the Masters. Like, I mean, with the playoffs, I mean, it was only a one hole playoff, but we saw Rory at his best. And I mean, I think it was Rose, right? Rose?
Yeah.
Rose,
yeah,
dropping a dime beforehand. And then you're like, oh my God, no, 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 no. And Rory's up. And then he drops within Rose's shot. And you're like, oh, these guys are both on. I want those guys to be just so on point and on target and just really showing off their skills. I felt like they were just like chunking shots left and right. I feel like they were just tired at the end, man. And it was just like, try, try, try. But I did like, what's his face, doing the driver off the deck to get there. And everybody was cheering for him to do the driver off the deck. And it almost went in the water. I mean, it was like literally 2 feet away from the water and it just stopped. And I was like, oh my God, that could have been a catastrophe.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Am I the only one that felt that way?
Honestly, man, I tried to get on and watch it. I just, by the time we got back home from the course, because it was probably about like an hour back home for me just because of traffic on 95, surprise. So I tried to get on the last couple of playoff holes. I remember calling my family, and like I said, big golf family. So they were like, oh, we're watching the playoff holes. So I'm trying to get Golf Channel on to watch it. And at that point, all I hear in the background is, oh, one guy from New Zealand just won it. And I'm like, ah, shit. Well, I'm not even turning it on because it's over.
Yeah. I think the biggest story was Rory for the whole tournament. I mean, quadruple bogeyed. And then I just felt like he was just sort of out of it. And then even the announcer said something that was very odd to me. And I sort of understand it in a way as a competitor. Like, you win the Grand Slam and now he's like, oh, I got it. I'm done. And now he just doesn't. He said, he's like, I lost that competitive edge and I'm trying to get it back and I'm trying to figure it out. And that's got to be tough because, hey, you got the Grand Slam. Like, that's awesome. You're probably one of the greatest golfers in the world. Like, you know, like, you're going to be in the Hall of Fame. You're going to be one of the best there is. And I want to know how he's going to get that competitive edge back. Like, I know you probably already talked to Tiger about it. Like, where do I get this competitive? Where do I, you know, how do I get that back? And I think it's going to take time for him to get back and get a good mojo going. I just was a little fearful when the announcer said that. I would rather have had, I'm shocked even an announcer said that out loud. That was the creepy thing. Like, I'm like, whoa, if he knows this, like, what is everybody else saying around, like, you know, the PGA and all the pros and stuff? So that kind of creeped me out a little bit. What do you guys think?
Yeah, see, no, I think, and then I'll give it to you, Dylan. I think Rory, I this could be his slump. And he needs to figure it out because, I mean, I would say, I know Dylan's not a big fan of Rory, but he's one of the best golfers within the last 15 years. I know he's fell short on a few tournaments. It took him 14, 15 years to get to the Grand Slam. But he's just, he needs to focus, refocus, because he is a good golfer. He just isn't playing like it. And I think maybe him taking, you know, a leave from the Memorial Championship or Open last week may have affected it, because I feel like if you're on a hot streak like he was, and then you like skip out a bunch of tournaments, that mojo you have is gone. And I think that is true for pretty much any amateur golfer like us. Like, if we play around, if me and Dylan played golf today, right? And then we didn't play until, you know, August, right? We would be struggling. Whereas that's the same kind of concept as being in the PGA Tour. When you take breaks, I know you kind of need to rest your body, but I feel like your mojo, that kind of dog mentality goes away and you just shoot yourself in the foot.
Yeah, I mean, like Jack said, I am not the biggest fan of Rory. I actually dislike Rory. I won't deny he is a great golfer. But there's just a lot of things that rub me the wrong way about Rory. Like, recently, how do you not call Jack and tell him you're not playing this tournament? I mean, that guy is emotional. I'm not saying that in a bad way, but Jack is an emotional guy. And it's like, how do you not tell Jack, like, hey, give him a call and just be like, listen, I have things going on. I need to take a rest. You know, I'm sorry. You know, I would love to play, but it's just not feasible for me this year. How do you just not, you just radio silence the man? Like, come on. Like, and you see him, I just, over the years, he's rubbed me the wrong way. I actually used to be a huge fan of Rory until it just, like, all this, like, you know, different things came out about, like, just his personality and things like that, where I was just like, yeah, it kind of turned me off as a fan. But it's just like, I understand the competitive nature thing to a point, but it's like, that's kind of what separates the great golfers from the all-time greats. I mean, like, I don't think I've ever heard Tiger Woods' competitive nature being gone. That man has won how many tournaments? He just wants to keep winning. You know, Kobe Bryant, you know, I mean, he's not obviously a golfer, but it's like, you never heard him say, oh, I won three finals now. My competitive nature's gone. Like, no, like, as a competitor, you're always going to be a competitor. So what now has changed where now you're not a competitor?
My thing is, like, what rubbed me really the wrong way is I think golf is getting bigger, and I don't think it's just solely because of the PGA and LIV and LPGA. I think YouTube golf really grew golf really well, and he just comes – he always goes, like, cheap shots the YouTube golfer world. Now, like, I understand, like, hey, there's – and we're part of that world in a way, too. I mean, there's no lying about that. And it's coming sort of after us in a way. But I like what, you know, Grant has done, what Bob Dole Sports have done, you know, good. And, you know, the list goes on Foreplay, and the list just can go on and on and on and on. And we're just, it's just growing the sport. It's, you know, it's younger people are more, I think, geared toward YouTube. And then now they're watching, you know, maybe some of these pros going on Bob Dole Sports, going with Grant, going on good, going on, you know, Foreplay. And they're really watching these guys just having conversations. And, oh, these guys are normal. Like, watching Tiger Woods on Foreplay for, like, what? I think it was, like, only 8 minutes he was on Foreplay. Yeah. And he did the longest drive contest, and he got on his knees. Like, that's, like, oh, these guys are really athletes. Like, these guys are, like, monsters. Like, these guys know how to – and kids are going to look at that and be like, whoa, like, if he's that good, like, let me watch him on tour now. And it's gears toward that. And the PGA's numbers are going up and up and up and up.
Oh, yeah.
How are you – why is Rory making fun of it? Like, why is he so against it? He will not go on any YouTube channel. He won't do this. He makes fun of it. It's like, dude, the game's growing, and that's a good thing. Why are you hurting it in a way? And he used to be the poster child, but I think, personally, I think the PGA sort of like turning away from him a little bit and moving the other way with it. They're going more towards Scotty because Scotty's been on YouTube. He's been on this. He's actually hilarious. I never knew, you know, Scotty on the PGA, when you're watching him, he's never, it shows emotion, nothing like that, unless he's at the Ryder Cup or something like that. But when he went on Grant's, he was making fun of Wesley and like joking about that. And it was just like, wow, like this guy's a human. It makes them human in a way. And like now you're starting to see the PGA sort of take notes from the YouTube world and is wiring these guys up on Wednesday and practice rounds and talking. You know, they're like joking around with each other and you hear them talking to each other and having a good time. And you're seeing like even on Wednesday on the par three tournament for the Masters. Like, you saw them with their families. You saw how they were interacting with each other. And then, like, you sort of got the, like, background story. And then that's when Full Swing started coming into play. And then you're starting to know the background. And that's how my wife really got into golf, is understanding their backstory. And now she's rooting for all these certain golfers that were on Full Swing. And she's loving it. She's like, oh, I know all their backstory, so this is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, like, but my mom,
Rory turning his back on it is like insane. And even Sarah said, like, even him on Full Swing, she wasn't really fully on board. She's like, he felt like kind of stuck up there. She's like the old country club feel of golf. He's not the new wave of guff.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, it's bad. Like, my mom, obviously, like I said, we're a big golf family. My mom was never, you know, the biggest into golf growing up. But, like, now that all three of her kids golf, her husband golfs, her father golfs.
She's surrounded.
She's got real big into it now. And even she's like, it's like, you know, you look at, like, different golfers and they interact with the crowd. Like, obviously, you're at a tournament. You're trying to win. You're making money. But it's like you got these certain players that are out there interacting with the fans, and it's not like they're at the bottom of the leaderboard. Like, you look at Bryson when he won the U.S. Open last time, he's taking pictures with people in the stands as he's playing, and stuff like that. And you see Rory, he won't even, like, give a high five to a kid standing at the rope going to the next tee. It's like, come on, dude. You're locked in that much, really, but the other guy who's beating you by two strokes.
Well, I think a lot of these guys were taught, like, hey, keep your personal life hidden from the public eye for so many years. And then, I mean, when you look at Bryson when he first won a major to his recent major, like, the roar is so much different. And it's just like Bryson was like, oh, well, I was taught to keep my hidden personal life, you know, away from everybody. You know, I try to, like, hide everything. I didn't want to get my, you know, personality into the mix and blah, blah, blah. And now I think he's more relaxed in front of the camera and playing because he's like, I'm just going to be me and play me and have a good time. And I think that's a huge part of the game is being relaxed and being yourself. And I think that's what Bryson is. He's just a jolly, good, funny guy and just loves it. Do I know what it's like to be the number one golfer in the world? No. And Rory was there at one point. So I don't know that situation. But, I mean, we have now a funny story. I mean, we're like, listening to Scottie Scheffler joking around him being in a jail cell. And it's like, you know, it's just like hysterical to think about. Like, number one golfer was in a jail cell warming up for the championship. Like, yeah. It's just like so funny because he's like, yeah, I was just warming up doing all my workouts there while my, you know, the PGA like head lawyer is in there screaming like, hey, he's the number one golfer. He didn't do anything wrong. It was just a misunderstanding.
Moving on up, kind of in the same vein, who do we think are the top five golfers of all time? I'll take this first. This is of all time. I think you got to go with Tiger Woods. Obviously, he kind of he changed the sport.
Reinvigorated.
Yeah, he reinvigorated the sport of golf, right? He was winning all these tournaments. He was such a young player. He got to the Grand Slam so quick. And just, you can't think of golf without Tiger Woods and what he's been going through the past 15 years, him, you know, getting in a car accident and then, you know, DQing himself because he couldn't walk. It just, people's always, I think there's more viewers of a golf outing when Tiger Woods is on the course. So I think he has to be there, right? Then I think number two, this is in no particular order. I got to go with Scottie Scheffler. Scottie Scheffler is the new Tiger Woods, right? He has the Nike brand. He is, you know, not as young as Tiger Woods, but he's won all these tournaments. He won over $66 million last year on the PGA Tour. And now everyone wants to watch Scottie Scheffler play because if there's no tournament without Scottie Scheffler, then what's the point of watching, okay?
We're in this stupid conversation when, like, oh, you know, Scotty's fun to watch, but he just has no personality argument like last year.
Yeah.
Like that huge, like, stupid conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. And I think he has taken note of that. I think everyone enjoys Scottie Scheffler. Personally, number three, I got to go with Rory. I know Dylan doesn't agree with me, but I think Rory McIlroy is one of the biggest – golfers of all time, and he has been, like Dylan said, the poster child between PGA Tour and LIV Tour, and he kind of has had all this pressure on him to be the voice of reason, right? And I know he can be an asshole sometimes, but it's enjoyable to watch him play, I think. Number four, I got to go with the Golden Bear. I think he kind of before Tiger's time, he was the guy. He was the guy on the golf course. He was winning all these tournaments. He's one of the greatest guys of all time. And then I got to go number five. Give me – this is a hot take, but I – no, No, I'd probably go with.
I swear to God, if you say Bernhard Langer, I'm going to scream.
No. I'm trying to think of golfers.
Are you serious? You really don't think of like the best guy, probably one of the best known golfers in the world?
Who?
Arnold Palmer?
Oh, yeah. Arnold Palmer's probably number five. Anyone can take this.
That's a crazy.
I mean, so my top five is a little bit older than yours, Jack. And there's no offense to Scotty, Rory, or, you know, any of the guys you said. But we're going to go to the people who really, like, shaped the game. I mean, obviously, so Tiger is my one. Everyone knows I love Tiger Woods. He's my guy. He's the one that got me into golf. I love him. Number two is Jack Nicklaus. Golden Bear. He does his thing. You know, he was Tiger before Tiger was Tiger. Number three, Ben Hogan.
Oh, that was good. I had that.
Some of the worst golf clubs I've ever used in my life, the old Hogan's. But, try to hit a Hogan one iron and tell me how your hands feel afterwards. Because I can tell you it doesn't feel good. Number four, Gary Player. That man, he's 89 years old and he's still out here hitting more fairways than me. Gary Player. And then my last one is we're taking this real far back. We're going Sam Snead. So those are my top five best golfers of all time. You have some of the people who shaped the game to where it is. I mean, Sam Snead was still using hickory clubs. I mean, going back and watching some of the old stuff of him and just reading about some of the stuff from him. These are all just generational players that I named. I mean, that's just me. I was a history major in college. So I love the history of the game. And so those are my top five.
All right. So I have top one, Tiger, of course. Number two, he retired at a young age, 28 years old, never became a professional golfer. Won 13 majors. He really just couldn't take the pressure of being a pro. He really said, like, I don't want to, you know, do it as a professional. I wanted to put Bobby Jones there. Bobby Jones. Number two. Scotty. Then Arnold. No, Jack Nicklaus, and then Arnold.
Yeah, so, I mean,
Bobby Jones is probably one of the best golfers, and he was just an amateur. Like, it's insane. Like, he won 13 majors, and he was 28 years old when he retired. So that's crazy.
Yeah. I honestly completely overlooked Bobby Jones, and it's just like, how do I do that?
He had a room literally named after him at Augusta for the amateurs that play the Masters, the Bobby Jones room.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, there's still great golfers on the course. I mean, you know, I think Sepp Straka, he's going to be one of the greats. I think you'll see him kind of come out on his own, you know, here in the next couple of years. I think, you know, Scottie Scheffler is still always going to be so good. So there's a lot of good golfers on tour right now, but I'm excited to see.
Who's the kid from Pittsburgh that was – he's a pro now. He's, like, sort of bigger, the long hair.
Shipley?
Shipley, yeah. You know he was a caddy at Oakmont, right?
Yeah. I always said Bill Shipley, but he's not a running back for the Eagles. I forget his first name. Neil Shipley, I think it is. Neil Shipley?
Yeah, Neil Shipley. Yeah, there it is. Yeah.
I almost said Will Shipley, and I'm like, wait, he didn't just win a Super Bowl.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm actually excited to see how he plays at the U.S. Open. So that's going to be
Honestly, who I really want to see succeed are the two young kids, that Maverick McNeely, and I think it's Blades Brown. Like, dude, come on, Blades Brown. You're telling me you have to be an amazing golfer if your name is Blades Brown. Like, come on.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I always like watching the young guns play. Like, sometimes I wake up early because sometimes they're always the early tea time. And you're just watching these guys play, and it's just like sometimes you see them their first time at Augusta, and they hit a ball, and they think it's like they get a little cocky, and I think it's like after like hole two, they're like, "Holy hell, this is as hard as they say." It's pretty. They look shell shocked. They're like, "Holy, you know."
Yeah, so you can. I mean, you can only imagine. You know, if you were just coming up, you know, making your PGA Tour debut, and you were in the Korn Ferry Tour, right? They don't really have many bystanders at all during their tournaments. And then you get your PGA Tour card, right? And you're in, I don't know, Canadian Open, right? Like, those
gotta be a shell shock.
Oh, 100%. Like,
gotta be a shell shock.
Not even like big tournaments, like the John Deere Classic. That's a great tournament. I love watching that tournament. But like, if you just are on the Korn Ferry and then you come to the John Deere Classic, like, holy shit, like, okay, this is legit. Like, this is insane. Yeah. So it just kind of like, how do you wrap your head around, even if you're like a 22-year-old PGA Tour, you got your card. How do you wrap your head around like, oh my God, there is a guy to my right, to my left, like I don't want to hit them, and it just blows my mind. It just blows my mind.
I mean, I think my favorite clip on YouTube of golf is, I think it was like an LPGA, like U.S. Open, like tournament. It wasn't like the U.S. It was the amateur tournament to get into the U.S. Open. And there's all these people lined up, and this girl just smacks a ball and hits this woman. And she had a re-tee again, and she re-teed and hit again.
It's Caitlin Clark.
It's the same person. Yeah.
That was Caitlin Clark. She is one of the most, she is one of the most taught after players in the WNBA. And she decided to play golf. And she was even said after that, she's like, yeah, I was – sweating, I was shitting my brains. Like, that has to be scary.
Like, even not like even YouTube, like classics and stuff like that, like all those things, those guys are like, yo, I'm not used to crowds like that. Like, I was literally shaking while I was teeing off. Like, yeah. I never played in a crowd like that, and it's like pretty funny to think about. Like, yeah, these guys probably are like, holy shit, this is insanity.
I'll just wait till we play Bethpage, by the way, because everyone waiting for tea time is up on the balcony watching you tee off, and they're heckling you.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. So, in a weird way, I love that.
Oh, Jack's going to shit himself.
I'll be fine.
I love
we had four people behind us today. I can't hit in front of people like that.
Yeah, that's true. This is very true. Speaking about shitting pants, let's talk about what's coming up next weekend. We got Frankie Frank, his first Father's Day. Frank, how you feeling about this? I know it's nothing different, but it's a big day. It's a big deal. I mean, Sarah just had her Mother's Day. How you feeling about this?
So I'm really pumped about it. Friday, I actually have off from work. So I'm actually golfing with my dad on Friday. And, you know, him and I just got to go out and just play 18 and just, like, you know, have father-son moment, just, like, talking about being probably a dad and just, like, laughing our butts off nonstop. And then Saturday, I actually have my nephew's birthday party, so we're just, like, sort of hanging out around there. And then Sunday, we're doing a nice barbecue at my house and just having the whole family there. I'm, like, I feel like a lot of my friends are like, yo, that's all my guy friends that are like dads. They're like, yo, we're golfing, golfing, golfing. And I'm like, guys, do you know how insane the golf courses are going to be each day?
Oh, yeah.
And like, I was just like, no, I'm not golfing on Saturday or Sunday. Like, because I already looked at like tee times like for this weekend, and every single course I saw is already booked. And I'm like, oh my God, can you imagine just sitting at every tee box for like 15 minutes just to tee off? Like, I feel like those are like the worst. Like, there's always like two weekends that I sort of avoid from. And like one week, it is Father's Day, July 4th weekend, and Memorial or Labor Day. I always put those two in like the same boat because it's like sort of the same thing. But I try to stay away from that Monday of Labor Day and Memorial Day. And I'm like, dude, that day's always going to be like one of the roughest days to golf because you're going to nonstop have someone golf. Like, everybody wants to golf that day.
Yeah.
But that's my thing. Like, I told Sarah not to go crazy, but she told me she bought me something really nice. And I'm like, don't go too crazy, blah, 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 blah. And she's like, no, I want to. I'm like, now I'm like putting that in my note, like, okay, next Mother's Day I need to go as good, you know? It's always just like
Yeah, I mean, it's just something that, you know, eventually when Dylan and I have kids, it's going to be one of those most memorable moments. Because, you know, okay, I celebrate my dad's Father's Day. I'm sure he was kind of in the same shoes as you when, obviously, this is your first Father's Day. So it's just like, that just, I don't know, those little memories make a difference, and it really makes you like, okay, wow, this is what being a father is. And it's something special, you know, bringing somebody, some completely wild or random person into the world, you know, yeah, your kid. And it's like, holy hell.
It's like how I look at it. It's love at first sight. Like, everybody warns you about like how much you're going to love a kid right when it's born, no matter what. And like when he was born, like it was like automatic. And I was like, oh, come on, you guys are being crazy. Blah, 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 blah. First, second, like tears rolled down my eyes. I was holding him, and it was like, yeah, this is just everything that everybody was talking about times like 100. Like, yeah, you're just like so happy. And you see your dad, and then like everybody being, I think the coolest thing is this is my dad's first Father's Day as a grandpa.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's even cooler, I feel like. I think that's like even like better than being a dad on Father's Day in a way. I think it's more for the grandfather just to be more appreciative and just like, yeah, just looking at just life in general, it really moves fast right now. Yeah. I mean, my life is flying by and I'm trying to hit that break and it's just never going, but you just got to enjoy the ride and just don't blink. I mean, you don't ever take a relaxing day. I mean, this weekend I was gone for 48 hours and I would say like right when I got to the hotel, because it was just me that drove, because Frankie and Sarah stayed back. And right when I got to the hotel, I FaceTimed my wife because I was like, oh, I want to see the kid, you know? And it was just like such a weird situation for me because yeah, it was like, damn, like I really miss my family. I miss my kid. I miss this. And in the back of your head, and then you're golfing with your friends for a little bit, and then you get done golfing, and then you're FaceTiming them again, going, hey, how's it going? How's everything going? Let me see the baby, you know? And yeah, it was just like, I think every like 5 hours I FaceTime my wife, and I know that sounds so corny, but I wanted to see my kid. I wanted to see what he's doing. You know, you never know what's going to change overnight. So, I mean, life's great right now.
Yeah, awesome.
I love it.
Nah, congratulations on being a father, and we wish you the luck for your Father's Day. Moving on, this is the final topic of the night, the U.S. Open. What our predictions are, who do we think will be top five, who's going to win it all. So whoever wants to take it, we can just go rapid fire.
All right, so I have actually sort of a cool story for you. So I was up in Johnstown. It's like maybe an hour away from Oakmont. And I was talking to the hotel clerk, and I'm like, hey, like you could tell that they're like preparing for something, you know? Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, we're sold out, and there's people literally like calling us every single day to like rent a hotel here. And then I was talking to my boy who rented an Airbnb in Johnstown, and he turned to me, he goes, yeah, they're like trying to force us out as soon as possible on Sunday, because they have people staying at these houses that are like hour and a half away from Oakmont, because the whole town is basically leaving and just put their all their houses on Airbnb for the U.S. Open. So like, I didn't realize this, but like when you have like a huge major or something like that, it's just not that town shuts down. All the towns around it shut down. I mean, these guys are all preparing. Then I talked to the golf course that I played out. Now, remind you, it's just a little 9-hole golf course. And they're like, oh my God, we're booked solid this week because people that are going to the U.S. Open are playing like a quick 9. And then they're going to go drive towards Oakmont and get down there and watch the Oakmont. I was like, that is so cool. It's so interesting just what one tournament could do for all these counties around there. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, my family's from up in the Johnstown, like my dad's family's from up in the Johnstown area. Also, my mom's family lived up there for a while. And that area doesn't have much going on. So when you are hosting the U.S. Open, it's like the Pope's coming to town up there. So I could only imagine what it's like up there. Because like I said, I've been to Johnstown many times. My grandparents actually live in Bedford, Pennsylvania. Okay. So yeah, when you have something like that going on, it's like the Pope's coming to town. Everyone's like, holy shit.
Yeah, it's like so funny because it's just like, you know, Johnstown downtown is like, you know, they're down at like 9 o'clock. You're the only car that's driving around at 9 o'clock at night in Johnstown.
Ian's like, going to the Open.
Like, it's crazy.
No, it's but, funny. So Dale and I, we were at the course today. The starter, actually, back in the day, he had a buddy that was a member at Oakmont. And it was when they had the U.S. Open there, I don't know, years ago. And he said, yeah, no, it is – he's played Oakmont. And he said it is literally, as they're talking about it right now, that's how it's going to be playing, no matter what. The roughs are rough. Like, it's going to be – me and Dylan were talking about today. I think potentially the winner of the U.S. Open this year may have, you know, over par, will be over par. Because just from what they have been – predicting and talking about, that rough is like, it ain't you know, cheap ass rough. It is a rough that if your ball gets in there, you're screwed. You're gonna have to get under that ball as much as possible. So it's gonna be playing very hard. So I think Dylan is in the right mindset. I think it's gonna either be one or two over, or even, or one under. So I don't think we're going to see, like today at the Canadian Open, this winner had what, minus 18 under. You're not going to see that this year. And I think one of the coolest stories that I was listening to on a podcast is, I forget his last name, but his name is Alistair. I forget his last name. He was on the 4Play podcast. And back in 2016, he was like your second, like, you know, if somebody DQs or misses their tee time, he'll fill in. So he's never made it to the U.S. Open. This was his first time he made it. He qualified for the U.S. Open. He qualified on Monday or Tuesday last week. He shot, what, 4 under. And his story is cool because, obviously, he's going to be swagging out the Barstool Golf logo.
Yeah, that's really cool.
He's a Barstool golfer.
Alistair Dougherty.
Alistair Dougherty. And I was telling Dylan today. So the qualifier was last week, right? 2 weeks, give it three weeks leading up to the qualifier. He got in a really, really bad accident. He got T-boned. He was in a minivan. T-boned, totaled the minivan, was in the hospital, bleeding everywhere. And three or four weeks later, he's qualifying for the U.S. Open, and he made the qualifying round. So that's just a cool story. I just got chills right now. I don't think he's going to do much, but I think, you know, he could be on that leaderboard. I think this means a lot to him, and you will see that happening with the way he plays.
The person I want to watch for the U.S. Open is Mason Howe. He's a junior in high school. He shot a minus 18. I think on that Sunday to qualify for the U.S. Open. I'm really excited to see how this kid plays. I mean, he's a junior, so what is he, like 17, 16 years old?
Yeah,
that's going to be interesting to watch, to see a 16-year-old kid. Do I expect a lot from him? No, but it would be awesome to watch him make the cut.
Yeah,
and see where this goes. I think this kid, if he even gets past the cut, man, you're going to see this kid everywhere. And I think the scholarships are going to be pouring in for golf.
He must already have a good amount of them.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, even making it to the U.S. Open, I think they're already pouring in and coaches are already calling. But if he makes the cut and he handles that pressure, man, he's – this is going to be a really cool watch. That's going to be my number one watch flyer right off the bat of, like, you know, the under the, like,
pros and stuff. This is like the unknowns that I'm really excited to watch, and he's going to be probably my number one that I want to watch and check up on and see how he's playing.
Yeah. See, I have some hot takes for my predictions this year. Okay. I told Jack one of them, but I had a list of four people that I think are could possibly contend or win. So first one who I have it written down here just so I won't
Scottie Scheffler.
No, actually.
What?
Bryson DeChambeau.
I mean, yeah.
He that was my man balls at US Opens. Mm-hmm. Second one, Abberg. Louis Abberg.
He's on my top five.
My next one, Tyrrell Hatton. And my fourth one is Askay Bhatia.
Mm.
Yeah. Their last two are my two dark horses. But I think those four guys are all going to compete this week.
I think, like, I really like that list. I like Kim there. I like Kim. Mm. I like, I know this is going to sound like crazy, but I like, no, wait, he's not in it anymore. Is Kepler in there? Kepler's going, right?
I have the list here. Let me look. I'm looking at the pairings right now. I have
Koepka. What about Koepka?
Koepka. I'm like, wait, did Max Kepler make the US Open?
Yeah, I was saying Kepler, but I meant Koepka. I have Koepka at top five. I have Scotty as actually winning. Yeah, those are like my top right there is Koepka, Bryson, and Scotty.
I also think Keegan Bradley could make a run at it.
Yeah.
Not in America.
That would be poetic.
Yeah.
Yeah, my
that would be poetic if he wins that. Actually, no, I'm rooting for that. Yeah, that's Keegan all the way.
Yeah, no, I think it's, for me, Keegan Bradley. I'm going to put Alistair Doherty up there just because I think his story is so cool. I'm going to go with, I will be your basic white guy. I'll go with Scottie Scheffler. No, Scottie Scheffler. I will go with Siwoo Kim.
I love Kim.
And then I'll go with, I'll go DeChambeau. No, I'll go Keegan Bradley.
I feel like Kim's going to get a hole-in-one. That's what I think is going to change the game there because everybody's going to be like, I think it's going to be really close in the plus field, but a hole-in-one will change the game. And he's the number one, I think, golfer in hole-in-ones in the past 5 years now. And I think a hole-in-one or getting it even really close to the hole is a huge factor for this tournament, especially – I mean, par threes, I think, is going to be the ultimate thing here. I don't think it's going to be as much as the par fours. I think everybody's going to be struggling on it. But the par threes are going to be the monster that you need to really get on the green, get close to the pin, and just, you know, have that, like, three-footers every time. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think Kim has sort of an edge. With that, so that's where I'm putting Kim, like maybe top three. I still have Scheffler because he's just still amazing no matter what.
Well, that's the problem with this upcoming week, man. The shortest par three at Oakmont is 182 yards. There's, I think it's the eighth hole. I think it's like the eighth hole. It's a par three. It's playing 289 yards right now. It's listed.
That's why Scotty number one. He almost dunked one, didn't he?
I think so.
From 280.
Yeah, that's why I also picked Bryson. Because Bryson, I mean, a 280 for Bryson's like a 3-iron.
Yeah, that's another huge factor is Bryson's just, you know, but he takes a lot of chances. I mean, he'll bomb it, but it'll go in the rough.
Yeah, and that's the problem. I mean, like even today, I mean, we were playing probably on 3-4-inch rough at the most.
Yeah.
And I think one hole – I think it. I hit it into the rough, and I took 5-iron. It was a par 5. I maybe hit it 40 yards out of the rough just because – and I put a good swing on it too, and Jack's like, wow. And I was like, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
And the starter was telling us – who was it? Greg Norman. He said he was watching Greg Norman at one of the old U.S. Opens at Oakmont, And he said he literally hit it into the rough there, and all you saw was him hit it out of it. All you saw was grass come up. He took like two steps forward and then hit it again.
Oh my god!
And it's like,
yeah, this is gonna be a challenging trek for sure. I mean, like I said, that rough is rough. It's going to be a interesting 3 days. I'm sorry, interesting 4 days to see like who comes out on top. I mean, I think this is one of my favorite. This is number two out of my favorite tournaments to watch because it's called the U.S. Open. So that means you don't have to have a PGA Tour card. You literally can be an amateur. I could be on the U.S. Open. You know, you got to qualify for it. So I think it's a really cool layout tournament. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And it's going to be fun golf to watch for sure. They got to stay in the fairway, though. That is the trick. You got to stay in that fairway because if you're in that rough, good luck.
Yeah, that's facts.
That's the hugest thing about it. I mean, Oakmont is just a monster in general, and just every video that we see, they just keep talking about the rough, the rough, the rough. But the greens there are really hard too. So, who's the designer at Oakmont? Did we know
that? Literally was just Googling that.
I wonder who that is.
I literally was looking that up. I was literally saying I'm not sure who made Oakmont. I wonder.
I know it was updated in like
Henry Founds.
Yeah, Henry Founds and his son William Founds.
Okay.
Back in that was
1903.
Yep.
Yeah, I knew they updated it in 2003, right? 2003, they said they updated it.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 100 years later or something like that. They updated it to make it longer, something like that. But yeah, I mean, still, that course it's just so awesome. And just like, I love whenever they play at a really cool course like Pinehurst for the US Open. Now they're playing at Oakmont. It's always just so interesting. And it's going to be really hard to repeat what happened last year with Bryson, but still, I am so excited for it. Like, I'm here all for it. I do not care.
So it says right here that Oakmont Country Club's most recent major update was completed in 2023.
Oh, I was wrong.
So they worked on bunkers. That's where their main focus was, on bunkers.
Yeah.
So it's recently updated, but I'm sure it's still going to be a bear to play, a trek to play.
I was telling Jack today, my range for the winner was 2 under to 2 over. It's going to be somewhere in there.
All right, predict the winning score right now. What's the winning score?
One over.
Frank?
-1.
I'm going to say -2.
Ooh.
See, I'm the pessimist of the group, huh?
Yeah, we'll see.
No, I just think someone is just gonna have like what I say about Kim is like that whole like a hole in one or something like huge like that, and then you could stay even and you stay minus like 1 or 2 in just one day and maybe go +1 or stay even for the rest of the round. Might be the huge factor there, and I think that's going to be it. And like that's why I'm putting Bryson, Kim, and Scheffler up there, because they're so good at getting it on the green and getting it close. And that's where I'm at. And their accuracy is always just on point at all times.
Yeah.
Well, everyone, that's all we have for tonight. We're excited for Frank for Father's Day coming up. The U.S. Open's in the air. So make sure you watch out for that.
I think
Dylan and I will be on next weekend. Frank, will you be on or no?
Oh, I'll be on.
Okay. So you'll see us next week. And fellas out there, I got one thing to say. Play 18. Don't care what she says. Have a good night, boys. Bear with me, boys. Here we go.
Hey.